Welcome to CMO Convo, the show where we talk marketing leadership so you can take action. One of the biggest questions for marketers is where their careers go once they hit CMO. Surely there's nowhere further. For Rob Balderston, his experience as CMO at Lockit led him to take on a new challenge, Chief Product Officer. Discover why this move makes sense for marketers and what advantages you can bring to the role in this episode. Hi, Rob. Welcome to CMO Convo. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks, Will. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for joining me because we're examining something that I didn't even know was possible, really. And that's a CMO moving to a CPO role. It's something that I haven't encountered before. So very, very interested to have this conversation with you today, Rob.
Yeah, certainly willing to share my early experiences. I've been a CPO for 9 months now, so still very much still bedding into the role. But definitely a lot to learn in that time.
Definitely. Let's dig a bit more into your professional background. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, Rob, and sort of like how you reached this position maybe?
Sure. I mean, it's interesting. I've spoken to quite a few sort of product professionals, whether chief or otherwise, and typically not many people have a very clear route into that sort of career path, typically find it from another career path, whether that's like marketing or engineer or something. And I'm no different. I follow the very traditional career path of starting with a degree in jazz. So completely unrelated. And graduating out the other side of that, I got a job at a law firm, initially filling up the photocopiers, and then ended up on their events team, running sort of corporate events and conferences, and then digital marketing for those conferences. So then progressed into a different role in digital marketing for a B2B educational services provider up here in Manchester. And then onto an educational technology business where we were doing exam preparation materials for doctors and med students. That's a company called PassTest. And that is where I got my first, I guess, real taste of product, although I didn't really know what that was at the time. I didn't really know what the word meant. And now I find myself at Lockit, a insurtech startup, which I tripped over and fell into during the pandemic. They'd advertised for people to beta test their new app, and that was right up my street, and they were offering £100 to do it just before Black Friday. I participated in this little beta testing program for a couple of weeks, and a series of fortunate or unfortunate events later, I found myself running the product team at Lockit. So that's where I am now.
Fantastic. But you were doing marketing at Lockit for some time. You did have the CMO role there, didn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I started as digital marketing manager, and then over the course of 18 months progressed to head of marketing and then chief marketing officer. Yeah.
Nice. So did the jazz degree set you up to be able to improvise and switch between so much different stuff?
It's an interesting one. I don't know so much about improvisation, although I'm sure my team would tell you that there's plenty of on the fly improvisation during our stand-ups. I'd say more like the music degree in particular, there's a lot of transferable skills in terms of, it sounds really woolly and wet, but like teamwork, knowing how to get a bunch of people to all, you know, play the same thing at the same time in the right tune. I think a little bit of transferable leadership as well, sort of band leadership. I've run a variety of bands over the course of my sort of musical career, and there's a lot of similarities that I think you can draw to just leading a team of any kind of people.
Great stuff. Let's dig a bit more into sort of like the reasons why it was necessary for you to move into the CPO role. Let's talk a bit more sort of like the business situation, how things were at Lockit at the time, why it was necessary for you to sort of switch tack like this.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, the important context really is that we're a startup. And so despite being whichever of those marketing titles I had, it was never a neatly defined marketing role where I just spent all day doing marketing and nothing else. I've been doing customer service, finance, compliance, QA testing, even development. There's commits in our GitHub repository with my name on them, which I'm very proud of because I'm very much not a coder. And about this time last year, I was on a flight to Vancouver for my honeymoon, and sitting there for 8 or 9 hours, I was just sort of reflecting on where we were with the business and particularly my role and how much of my time I was committing to everything other than marketing. And it had gotten to the point where it was getting really difficult for me to ship any meaningful marketing initiatives because I was spending so much time already on, you know, other areas of the business, but particularly the product, working with our engineers, you know, copy for our app, you know, user journeys, flows, QAs, bug testing, all of that good stuff. So I just WhatsApped Christian, our CEO, and just made it clear that I wasn't 100% tied to this title of marketing, and that what I really, really wanted to do was commit my time and my resource and my energy to making the most positive impact on the business. And so just to sort of put him in that frame of mind of maybe Rob doesn't have to be delivering on marketing, and maybe he's not going to be offended if I ask him to do something else. And so, kind of left it there. But then over the course of the next 3 months, we talked about it. We talked about it with the rest of the management team. And October last year, we formalized that decision to move me over to running what is now our product team.
So was there an existing product lead at the business at the time, or was it
no,
a vacant position?
And I think that was it. There was this sort of real vacuum black hole of such a requirement for it that wasn't being filled, and that sort of, because it was nobody's job, it was everybody's, but there was no one just sort of, you know, putting those key sort of stakes in the ground and saying, here's what we are doing, here's what we're not doing. We had Andre, our CTO, who is an absolute machine of a human being, but I think his challenge was so wrapped up in the how, like the technology, the builds, the platform, that I think he's really welcomed a little bit of assistance on maybe putting some edges on the why and the what. You know, what are we going to be at build? Why are we going to build it? And I think one of the things that I'm particularly good at doing is turning around and saying no to stuff. So actually deciding on what not to do is quite often a really big challenge in any sort of profession, right? Marketing, product or anything. And I'm quite happy to be the person that puts my head above the parapet and says, no, we're not going to do that because. So I think that's probably one of the areas where I've added value.
Nice. So you obviously couch this in a very, very intelligent way of going about it, is the benefits to the business. But were there any personal motivations for you to move from sort of a marketing role to a product role? Is that something that you'd envisaged with your career path? Is it something that you were just really interested in getting into? Like, what kind of like the personal motivations behind it?
I'd love to tell you I have a plan. I still don't have a plan. Even now, my whole career has been sort of tripping over and falling into things and going, oh, I quite like doing this. The personal motivations, I guess, came from a little bit more reflection and reading more around the product role while I was on my honeymoon, in fact, and the weeks after it, and as well as digging into a few podcasts and stuff, and finding out that a lot of the skills required, or actually just the day-to-day work, was stuff that I had already done and that I was already doing, particularly in my previous role at Passtest, which was the medical education company. The marketing team owned a lot of the early product initiatives. So doing user research around new features, understanding what the requirements were, neatly defining how the best way to fulfill those users' needs. All of this is product work. I just didn't know it. I just thought it was part of marketing at the time, as a little bit green. So when I started reading around the broader responsibilities of what might be expected of a product guy, I was sort of ticking the boxes and going, I'd feel really comfortable with this. And something that I've always really enjoyed about my career is talking to the end users, talking to the people. There's great scope to do with that in marketing. You can find out how to talk to them. You can find out what kind of tone of voice they like. But even better than that, from my perspective, is finding out how to genuinely solve the problems that they have, how to build something that makes a meaningful difference in their lives. That was really clear to us at Passtest. It's been a huge point of sort of conversation and topic, and a myriad of different features that we could build at Lockit, and something that I'm still really passionate about, really getting to the nub of what is the real problem that the customer's facing and what's the best solution to solve that problem, because it might not necessarily be what they're asking for.
So are you 100% product now, or are you still doing marketing functions in your role? Like, how's it work?
We're still a startup. So, you know, I've got a change in title, but I think in some ways I just feel like I'm moving my way through the alphabet. I'm still doing plenty of marketing stuff as well. Still also dabbling in all sorts of other stuff. But I guess it's more of a meaningful shift for external from the company, understanding my role within it, and also, you know, formalizes it for the rest of the team. I still have a hand in the marketing stuff as well.
Is that because you just can't let the marketing go, or is it out of necessity that you're still involved in that?
A little bit of both. Yeah, to be really candid and honest, it's, you know, if I have an opinion about something, I struggle to not volunteer it, but always with good intentions behind it.
Definitely. It'd be hard to get yourself out of the trenches, isn't it?
Yeah, there is a little bit of that, like letting your baby go and fly for itself. Yeah.
Definitely. Let's talk a bit more about sort of like the practicalities of moving into the role. So you mentioned you had some experience with product-based roles. Like, what kind of like skills did you think you already had that were ready to go? And what were the ones that you thought you really needed to develop in order to move into a CPO role?
Sure. I mean, the first one definitely is that sort of user-centric focus. So user research, or you know, call them users, call them customers, whatever you want, the people that are gonna read your stuff and use your stuff. I'd done an awful lot of running focus groups, running surveys, analyzing surveys, summarizing, you know, conversations with, at the time, doctors, medical students at my previous business. And then we've since spun up a community at Lockit. I mean, the whole reason that I ended up joining Lockit was because I was part of a group of users that were submitting very heavy and candid feedback about the platform. And that is something that I've always really enjoyed, but is very, very centric to the product role. Talking to people, understanding what their requirements are, understanding what they like, what they hate, and then translating that into shippable features or, you know, shippable functionality. So it's very much a joint skill set that sits between marketing and product. We also got the opportunity to use a platform called User Testing a couple of years ago, which was brilliant. You could put real people from around the world in front of your website and just watch them fail to understand what you'd written. And it was really eye-opening, really, really good. We did loads of very, very good work for our brand, for our tone of voice here. But again, that all very much then bled into the product as well, how we talked about what we were doing and how we executed on it. So that's probably one of the pillars, that sort of the whole user centricity side, very marketing, very product. The second thing, as a marketeer, I've always been sort of a performance marketeer. So that's Excel and not Photoshop. And digital marketing and analytics, it carries forward into product. The only difference is you're not looking at your sort of website checkout funnel in isolation. You're looking at it from the moment they hit the website all the way to when they stop subscribing to your service, stop using the tool, stop using the feature. You talk a little bit less about conversions and a little bit more about milestones or aha moments, but it's all functionally very, very similar in the way in which you go about understanding what the points of friction are, what the pain points are, how you then go about unblocking those. So, you know, in the checkout, it could be changing the text on the new customer checkout to sign up or whatever that is. But, you know, in the product, it's as simple as start here or log in or new customer account. So there's so many similarities between digital marketing and analytics. The other side, I guess, is the community stuff. And that's something that I've really started to dig into at Lockit, which I've really enjoyed. I joined part of this beta testing community. And then when we launched as a fully fledged service, we set up a Discord server full of our super users, the people that really, really got the product, the people that really understood it. And it was just a treasure trove then of people that really wanted to talk to us and really wanted to help us out. And yeah, great to have a sounding board with new features. Quite often I'd sort of put a couple of terribly designed PowerPoint mockups of, hey, we were thinking about putting this new page in the app and it would do this. What do you think? And just throwing it out there and getting, you know, real life, real user feedback in the space of minutes, because they were on Discord and they're like, oh, I hate it. And here's why. Or I love it. And here's why. Here's what you should consider. Or why are you even doing that when you could automatically do it over here? It's just like crowdsourcing product development. And it's fantastic. Something that I'm really, really passionate about and would love to continue doing throughout my career.
Awesome. Awesome. Was there any kind of trepidation about engaging with these kinds of super users? Like, they are potentially more an expert about product development than yourself, and you being the CPO, they're going to expect you to be sort of the person to go to with like these really, really technical things. Like, how did you approach that?
I could understand hitting that. I think we neatly avoided it because we've always had a very, very clear mentality of we want to hear the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've always had that mentality across, you know, both personally and professionally in one-to-ones with managers. I'm like, look, tell me what's wrong. I'd rather know about it and fix it than not. And that extends to community and interaction on that side as well. The initial beta testing scheme that I joined with Lockit, I submitted something like a 30-page document full of screenshots of all the stuff that I'd found wrong with it. I was like, well, I hope you like it. And if you don't, never mind. But I think that is the most valuable thing you can have, is people telling you what's wrong. It's great to be in a room full of people telling you they love you, but it doesn't help you grow. And that's something that I've taken even from being a musician as well, like sitting down with your musical idols and them telling you, hey, you did a great job of that. I've had that in the past and then reflected on afterwards. Like, God, I really wish you'd told me how to improve though, because I haven't grown. I haven't moved on from this. So it can be the same personally and professionally, but I've never really had a problem with being told what's wrong. I'd much rather be the person that knows what's wrong and is listening and responding than the person that's sitting there with cotton buds in both ears going, no, our product's great.
Definitely. And I expect like the marketing background, that kind of level of empathy that you kind of have to build for your users and customers as a marketer, that's got to stand you in good stead for that kind of stuff.
Very much so. And with Lockit in particular, I was a huge proponent of the actual thing that we were building as well. I really loved it. And that was, I guess, a bit of a product challenge, because sometimes I had to take myself out of it, going that, you know, assuming that I am our perfect target user and target customer doesn't give me the authority to decide things because I like them or I dislike them. It still has to go out to a wider group. So yeah, it very much helps to be deeply involved in that and deeply passionate about it, but also can sometimes be a little bit of a hindrance too.
Definitely. You mentioned your team a few times, Rob. Like, how is that a dedicated product team that you're talking about, or is that sort of just like a cross-functional marketing product kind of department?
We run squads at Lockit, which I think comes from the Spotify model. I think I've remembered that right. So I run a cross-functional team. I've got front-end developers, back-end developers. I've got a mobile dev. I've got a designer. I've also got a project manager. And actually our CTO, Andrew, sits within our team. He's sort of, you know, obviously at the same level as me, but we look after very different elements of the projects. There's three of us in the team that ultimately guide the success of it, if you like. So you've got me as the product guy looking after what we're building and why we're building it, essentially, and sort of taking a look at those earlier decisions, as well as making sure that we're course correcting and staying on course of the what and the why. We've got Andrew, who very much looks after the how. He's our CTO, so he's making sure that the platform is stable and secure, and that we're not making short-sighted development decisions, and that we, you know, we're building this to scale. And then we've got James as well, who is our absolute ninja of a project manager, who makes sure that the trains run on time, makes sure that everything is incredibly well communicated, sprints are planned. Honestly, I don't know what we'd do without James. He's such a key part. There's a really great bit in the book from Tony Fadell, Build, where he talks about the difference between product managers and project managers. And this really resonated with me when I read it recently. So product managers are the champion of the user, whereas the project manager is the champion of the project. And that's very much what we have. We've got me going, let's make sure this is correct for the users. And we've got James sitting there going, let's make sure that this project stays on track and that you know, that one of these doesn't take precedence, which is really, really helpful. I think has been really successful for us.
So that kind of relationship, is that something that you think's really helped with you getting to grips with being a CPO, like running these kinds of project, like development projects that you might not have worked on before?
I think so, yeah. And the reality is I didn't just step in and start doing it. We'd been sort of iteratively creeping towards this kind of method of working before. Before I stepped into product, I was running a marketing squad. So I had a website developer on my team, and I again had designers. I was doing more of the project management side and campaign management, but ultimately I was reasonably comfortable with it. But definitely having those other roles that are looking after sort of the main functions of the project has been helpful, without having to keep all of those different streams in mind. The how, the what, the why, and the when is actually a little bit disconnected, and I found that that's been helpful, but for our particular configuration at least.
Let's talk a bit more about some of the other resources that have been helpful. Like you mentioned, like it sounds like it wasn't like a sudden switch, like you could like work your way up to it kind of thing. But were there any sort of gaps in your skill set that you identified that you need to work on, or is it stuff that you're working on right now, in fact?
There's always the next thing that you're working on, I think. And not all of it has been product related. In fact, I mean, I've read so many books and listened to so many podcasts in the last year to try and, you know, get up to speed. One thing that I found, I guess, is a common thread running through all of this is the sort of product mindset has been the biggest challenge. It's not necessarily developing a new set of skills or developing, I don't know, new competencies, new languages, those kind of things. I'm probably a lot more familiar with our project management platform, ClickUp, that we use, or, you know, the likes of Asana, Trello. I've used a bunch of them. Probably a little bit more in the weeds with that than I was. The things that I'd say that have been most beneficial, though, first of all, the most important resource by far has been Lenny's podcasts, which are free on Spotify. It's from lennysnewsletter.com. This guy, Lenny, was a product manager at Airbnb, and he now just runs a regular podcast where he interviews some like world-renowned product leaders. And that really helped me to get into the sort of product mindset. And I'm still a regular listener now. I've also read a ton of books, but not many of them have been so specifically product-centric. A lot of them sort of tangentially related. I've already mentioned Build by Tony Fadell. He's like a product maven, you know, behind the iPod. But he also goes into the wider context of building successful businesses. So that's as much relevant to, I guess, like the C in my job title as much as the P. But yeah, that's probably the only like really product specific one that I've come across so far. I'm sure there's plenty more that you'll get in comments and tweets and everything else after this show. But for some, you know, slightly less related ones, there's a big crossover between marketing and product, and, you know, sort of product led growth and sort of this growth hacker mentality. So Growth Hacker Marketing was a great book for that. How to Build a $1 billion App was really good as well. We're all really interested in behavioral science and the sort of psychology of decision-making at Lockit as well. So Influence by Robert Cialdini, Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, all about how to like negotiate, has been really, really interesting, both in terms of like internal team dynamics and, you know, having successful relationships with your staff, but also in terms of tone of voice and branding and, you know, what you write on your buttons and when users come to make decisions. That's all really interesting. In terms of team management, in particular, that sort of cross-functional team that we've been talking about, we're still in the process of bringing OKRs really to force in the business. We started that around the same time that I took on the product role, actually. I've just finished Measure What Matters, which is a fantastic book going into the successes of OKRs at huge, huge tech businesses around the world, Intel, Google, those kind of things. And I probably need to mention Crossing the Chasm because we're working at a tech business. So, you know, tech startup that hasn't read that, people will be asking why there's the gap. So that's actually been really helpful for that sort of early adopter and also that like community mindset, you know, how are we going to drive narrow and deep into our core beachhead target audience and then grow from there.
Awesome. So how do you see the role developing in the future? Like, do you think there'll be a point in the near future where you are just 100% product, or do you see yourself sort of straddling the sort of marketing product role for a while at least?
I would eventually see the really, really hardcore marketing stream taking a more and more distance as we grow. I'm still very much interested in product marketing. So shouting about the features, shouting about the functionality, talking about how we're working, how we're solving problems is still very much something that I'll be interested in for a long time yet. Where we start talking about, you know, PR campaigns and, you know, the types of TV ads that aren't, I guess, maybe more lifestyle or, you know, it used to evoke a feeling rather than specifically explain the product. I imagine that is the first area that I'll start to see disappear off to the distance. Ultimately, I still really, you know, I come from that sort of product marketing background. So I would imagine that I'll still have a hand in there for a while to come yet.
Awesome. And I know startup environments, it can be a bit like Tarzan swinging from vine to vine kind of thing. But is this something you've maybe like roadmapped or discussed with the other stakeholders in the business? Is this something that you've maybe worked out a timeline where this ideally should happen, this kind of shift? Or is it still more sort of,
I would say that we are still swinging from the vines and screaming at this point, if I was really candid, yeah.
but they're aware that at some point there will be sort of a switch where you are just 100% product and they'll get another marketing.
Definitely looking to bring in marketing recruits that will fit the bill. But again, you know, I still have that sort of main mentality. We've always had the sort of mentality that job titles don't matter to some extent. Obviously your job function does, the work that you get done matters. The guy that hired me at Lockit at the time, his title was vice president of beach drinks. So we like, you know, to some extent they're important. They were more important to me when I joined the company than they are now. Whether I continue having the CPO title or whatever, I think what I'm most always committed to doing is delivering value for the business. So if in 10 months, suddenly I need to go and step away and do something else, I'd still much rather be moving the business forward at pace than hanging on to a title or a specific function.
Definitely. It's a great attitude to have, Rob. And also, is your director of beach drinks, is he based in Manchester? It's pretty far to go to find
a beach. He was operating out of a yacht in Greece at the time.
Oh, well, good for him.
So yeah, very much living the life. Yeah. And still is, actually. We're still working with us on a slightly reduced hours because he's too busy renovating his catamaran. He's living the dream.
All right for some. All right
yeah,
for some.
Yeah.
So Rob, let's pull some stuff together, shall we? Let's talk about let's sum things up. Like maybe, like, what do you think are the most important skills for CMOs who are thinking of moving into a CPO role? Like, what do you think are the main things to focus on, or the main things in your background that might be beneficial?
Certainly the things that have helped me the most so far. I've already touched on data centricity and analysis and being able to take that sort of marketing optimization A/B testing mindset and just lift it out of marketing and drop it straight into product. I think that sort of product mindset that I mentioned, though, it takes it one level deeper into, we talk about milestones, or you hear them called aha moments. I vividly remember listening to the first Lenny's podcast that I heard, actually, and I was attracted to it because I saw that it was someone that was working with Spark Toro. Anyone that's listening that's familiar with Rand Fishkin and Moz, I was really into that. I was an SEO guy back in the day. And she talks about key product milestones and the fact that it's so important to not only measure engagement or that conversion, if you like, but also the re-engagement. So the idea is this customer is shopping around, they come, they download your app, or they come on your website, they try your free feature. And that's great. That's a conversion. You've got that. That's in the bag. But actually, what's really important to understand is how many of these people come back like in 3 days and use the feature again that hasn't been prompted by your marketing material, that hasn't, you know, that's not part of a try before you buy process where they've also tried out three of your competitors. How many people come back and legitimately use your feature for the second or the third or the fourth time? And you can really see that, wow, these guys are actually getting value now. That was a real sort of mind mental shift to, wow, we can't just say we had a sale and you know, obviously the marketing comparison, you still get re-engagement, you get repurchasing, you get customer lifetime value. But I'd never really encountered this idea of measuring that second event above the first, if you like, before. So that was one real sort of mental shift, but one that's not, it's not a leap that's hard to take. And as soon as you start getting into that mentality, it's easy. I think the other sort of capability that would set someone to a good start would be just context switching and being this sort of T-shaped kind of professional, you know, narrow and deep in your specialism. For me, it's digital marketing, but also being able to turn up to a meeting about, I don't know, long-term financial strategy and then plan your next product marketing campaign and then turn up to the next one that digs into AWS backend authentication or something. And like, you don't have to be an expert in every single domain, but it really helps if you can keep pace with those kind of conversations. And more importantly, understand the impact of on the product or on the end user of all those conversations that you're having. They would be my sort of real, what I'd like to think of, something that I do bring to the table without a lot of, you know, 10 years product experience.
Awesome. And let's open things up a little bit, because you did mention your willingness to, if necessary, to move into another kind of C role, another alphabet letter for your titles there. What do you think are sort of like the golden rules that you'll follow when making that kind of lateral move within the C-suite? Like, we're not just talking about CMOs moving to CPO, but any kind of move within the C-suite. Like, what do you think are the most important things that you're going to focus on if that occurs again for you?
I think broadly thinking about those that I've known in C-suite roles and also those that have transitioned, the people that I really admire and respect are those that are able to always bring it back to the user all the time. So it doesn't matter if you're working in finance, technology, HR, or anything. Ultimately, what you're doing has to be for the person that you're building this product for. It could be a business customer, it could be an end user, it could be a free user, it could be a paid user. But if you're able to take the context of these very high level decisions that you're making and apply it all the way back down the value chain to the user, I think you're on for success. I would probably guess that it's an easier thing for marketers to bring to the table, who maybe get a lot more face time, a lot more interaction with users. Same for customer service professionals. I've done my share of customer service in my time as well. If you can always have that user-centered mindset of, hey, we're making a big decision here, what's it actually going to do to them? They're paying our wages. I think that's really helpful. I think the second one is, I've already talked a lot about data, but you just can't escape it. And particularly when I stepped into product, there was a lot of analytical information that I wanted to add. Having been used to all of our marketing analytics tracking methodologies and platforms, stepping into our product and really digging in and finding out all of the events that we didn't already have configured, all the stuff that we didn't already know. You know, if you're not using data, you're sort of flying the plane without instruments through a cloud. You've got to understand at the very granular level which elements are making the difference and which aren't. And, you know, the only way that you can do that is with a really fine-grained attitude to tracking, analytics, and deployment of those alongside conversations and, you know, all of that qualitative time that you spend with the users as well. And I think, I guess, more broadly to sum up, wherever you've come from, it has value. So if you're stepping in from a marketing role to a product, or product to marketing, or technology to finance, or whatever, I think that that broader business experience is only going to help you. I certainly feel like my marketing experiences have helped me in product, but not just those. My customer service experiences, my band leading experiences, to take us back to the start of the call. I think that that broader experience overall is going to help you. So don't shelve it. Just make it a part of the new role that you're forging for yourself. And the likelihood is that if someone has decided to move you into that role, it's because they want you to bring that element of experience, not because they want you to leave it behind.
And I think that's a great note to end it on there, Rob. Like, that's a great message. Like, not just in terms of moving laterally, but in terms of like career progression as a whole. Like, you never know what's going to be useful in the long run. So thank you very much for this conversation today, Rob. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, thanks very much for having me. Really appreciate having me on.
Well, I appreciate you sharing your insights. Like, as I said at the top of the call, I wasn't super familiar with sort of CMOs moving over to product roles as a frequent occurrence, but it sounds like it makes absolute perfect sense. Like, for me, when I've thought about lateral moves, it's always been sort of that another name for marketing kind of C-suite role that's moving to like chief growth officer or chief brand officer. But this sounds like it is like a really good fit, whether you're looking to move out of the CMO role, or even just to like get experience with that product stuff to take back into a marketing lead role. I think it'd be really beneficial.
I'd definitely recommend, if you're a marketer that hasn't heard of this word product, because I certainly was one of those, that it's worth doing a little bit of reading around. Chances are you're already doing a lot of it. And I'm really, really happy to talk to anyone that's thinking about it as well. If you can find me on LinkedIn, there's not many Rob Boulderstones around, so you find me quite easily. I really, really love the product community, the Lenny's community, and a few other sort of Slack channels and you know, WhatsApp communities that I'm a part of. Everyone's very, very supportive, because I think most people come from this background of, well, I wasn't trained in this, I don't have a degree in this, I've started doing it. And so it's a great community to be part of, and very much happy to point people in that direction as well.
Awesome. Thank you very much for that, Rob. And thank you for those resources you talked about earlier with the books and the podcast as well. Like what you heard in this CMO convo? Make sure you hit that subscribe button and leave a rating so the whole world knows how great it was.